This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. Giving up meat and dairy in your diet could be the single biggest way to reduce your environmental impact on Earth, a new study suggests. Research has found that cutting these products from your diet could reduce an individual's carbon footprint by up to 73%. And joining me now on the line from the UK is Joseph Paul. He's the lead researcher of this study, and he's from the Department of Zoology and the School of Geography and Environment from the University of Oxford. Welcome, Joseph. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks so much for having me on.
So, Joseph, I mean, this study of yours has made international headlines. You know, it's titled, of course, Reducing Food's Environmental Impacts Through Producers and Consumers. What set you on this path of research in particular?
So I wanted to know if I could reconcile my own personal consumption of animal products with a rapidly degrading global environment. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know if there were farmers out there producing low environmental impact animal products and foods, and if so, who were they and what could we learn from them? Mm-hmm. The context for this question is that agriculture, unlike any other sector of the economy, is characterized by millions of diverse producers. So it seemed reasonable that all this diversity should translate into variable environmental impacts. And we wanted to understand this. So just for an example, an Indian smallholder growing light cheese is extremely different from a North American farmer rotating soy. Exactly. And maize. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to get into this diversity, understand it, and understand how it created variable environmental impacts.
Yes, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, you studied the impacts of nearly 40,000 farms in over 119 countries?
That's right, yeah. So we did that. We also included the impacts of 1,600 processors, pack types, and retailers. So that meant we could assess the environment. Yeah, so we could assess the impacts for the whole value chain. So right from the beginning, from the deforestation of land for agriculture and the emissions and environmental impacts that creates, the production of fertilizers and pesticides, all the impacts on farm, the impacts of transport, packaging, processing, and then retail.
Wow, that is so holistic. And I know this was like a 5-year long project.
That's right. Yeah, it took 5 years.
Did you actually travel to different countries for this? You know, I mean, how big was your team, or was it just you and your co-author?
So what we've done is we've relied on data that's been published by other researchers. So researchers over the last 15 years have been visiting farms around the world. Mm-hmm. Most of them are researchers visiting farms in their own countries. And that means we can collect all this published data and bring it together for the first time in such a comprehensive and standardized way. And that gives us access to this huge pool of information. But I personally did visit some farms. My co-author also is at a research institute in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And he runs a lot of field trials and trials there to understand ways to enhance productivity, new crop varieties and stuff like that.
Okay. And I guess, you know, having such a large set of data like this, I mean, it allowed you to see how different production practices, all of that, how that leads to different environmental impacts.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we looked at 5 different environmental impacts, as well. It's just worth saying that. So greenhouse gas emissions, land use, water use, and then acidifying and eutrophying emissions. And those last two basically represent air and water pollution, and they represent the degradation of terrestrial and aquatic ecosystems.
You did the study on 40 major foods. I mean, how did you kind of come to that number, 40 different types of foods?
So those 40 foods represent about 89% of our protein and calorie intake, so about 90% of what we eat. So mm-hmm. That's all the major foods, including like beef, pork, chicken, poultry meat, tofu, beans, peas, and that's up in the proteins, milk, soy milk, tomatoes, different types of vegetables, grains, potatoes, other root vegetables, coffee, cocoa. It's all your main foods that we consume. And it's quite striking, you know, globally, we get 50% of our calories just from 4 crops. So
insane, isn't it?
it's incredible. So actually, only 40 products, which are providing 90% of our food, is quite, you don't have to look at that many products to really basically represent everything that we eat.
Okay, so now walk me through the findings, which, you know, some, I know a lot of my meat-eating friends are very, very, you know, displeased about. What were some of the things that shocked you, you know, from your findings?
So I think what immediately struck us was how variable environmental impacts are, both within and between products. So for staple foods, say rice, a high-impact farm can create 700% more greenhouse gas emissions per serving than a low-impact farm.
Mm-hmm.
So just for a pint of beer, a high-impact producer is creating 400% more emissions and air and water pollution and using 500% more land than another. So you've got these really big differences.
Wow, that's
insane. I mean, one product that really stands out is beef.
Mm-hmm.
On land use, a high-impact beef producer is using 750 meters squared of land per kilogram of beef. A low-impact producer is using just 15 meters squared. So it's not a 10% difference or a 50% difference. It's a 4,900% difference between these producers. And we see this high variation in environmental impact in almost every product we assess and on every indicator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just to put it really simply, two products that look exactly the same in the shops can have dramatically different impacts on the planet. And today, we don't really have a way of knowing this when we're deciding what to eat.
For sure. It's just like product A, product B, and we don't actually know, you know, the story of how it actually came into our grocery shops, for example.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, we know that meat has a higher impact than vegetable proteins. But, I mean, beyond that, do we really know who the high impact producers are? No. Do we know the impacts of different vegetable or grain products that are in the shops? No. So at the moment, we don't really have a way of understanding that and making better decisions. And it goes the same for retailers and processors. They don't know, but they've got limited knowledge of who's really creating the high impact in their supply chains.
Mm-hmm.
And even down at the farmer level, there's a limited degree of knowledge as to how much impact they're creating as well.
So I guess in essence, what you found is that, you know, even the lowest impact meat and dairy products, they still cause more environmental harm than even the least sustainable vegetable and cereal growing. Am I right? Is that in essence?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you get all this variability in these products, but that variability fails to translate into animal products with lower impacts than substitute vegetable equivalents per unit of protein or per kilogram. So even if you wanted to go out to the shops and try and buy the most sustainable meat production, the sustainable dairy or the most sustainable eggs that are on the market today, the impact of them is still going to be higher than a vegetable equivalent. And that's the same for milk and soy milk. You go and buy the lowest impact soy milk, dairy milk available on the market, you're creating two times the greenhouse gas emissions and using two times the amount of land as soy milk.
Oh my goodness. I mean, just thinking, this is staggering.
Yeah, it's a really interesting finding. And it's important because it says that, you know, no matter what we do,
mm-hmm.
and we provide evidence that this is probably going to hold into the future, that no matter what we do, these products are going to be higher impact. It's not, for example, like aviation or cars where it is possible to innovate and possibly develop an electric car or an electric aeroplane.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're using current farming practices or even potential new farming practices, unless we just radically transform the system in a way that doesn't look like it does today, we are probably not going to achieve low impact animal products relative to other products on the market.
And I think another thing that I was reading, and I think another surprise from the work was actually the large impact of freshwater fish farming.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so freshwater fish farming and aquaculture in general is rapidly growing. So it's, I think,
especially here in Asia, right?
Especially in Asia, and particularly, so I think it's coming up, I think it's, if it's not already, it is basically half of our fish consumption is now aquaculture.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, it's about freshwater aquaculture, say 90%. I think in Asia, freshwater aquaculture is about 65, 70% of production. So what we did was had a look at these systems and we pulled out data that was published in the 1980s and was developed a little bit since, but not much. And we looked at when sediments So excreta and unconsumed feed it goes into ponds and settles at the bottom. So these ponds are not aerated. They're in hot countries. And you've got this big layer of organic material at the bottom. And it's basically the perfect environment for methane production, which is a very potent greenhouse gas, 34 times more potent than carbon dioxide over 100 years. So you've got all this methane being produced, and we find that there are, in certain circumstances, it's more methane production than cows per kilogram of live weight. So it's this really important source of greenhouse gas emissions that very few studies so far have looked at.
Okay. Is that something potentially that you might be looking into as well?
Yeah, well, there is actually a really interesting thing that you can see in the data. So this only really happens in freshwater systems. In marine systems and brackish water, i.e. mangrove systems, you don't get these emissions, and it's because of sulfur in the water. Mm-hmm. So you wonder if you can just add a little bit of sulfur, just a tiny amount, to these freshwater systems and completely eliminate these emissions. And that's something we're having a look at now with potential field experiments. Yeah.
Okay. Any other findings that you think, you know, really, I mean, again, I go to the word shocked you. I don't know if you expected all these kind of results when you embarked on this.
Well, I think as I was saying before, we don't really know these impacts. So just looking at them, there were a lot of surprises. I didn't really know that cheese had such a high impact, but it's actually higher impact than pork. It's higher impact than farmed fish, higher impact than chicken. That was quite surprising, and it's higher impact on all the other all indicators. But I think also the complexities of it all were interesting, that you look at these different solutions, say organic farming or no-till, which is a type of farming where you retain residue and you don't till the soil and don't disturb the soil after harvest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, and these two are proposed as environmental solutions for many producers around the world. And what we find is the effects of these are actually very variable as well. So what might be a solution for one producer isn't a solution for another producer. Okay. And we really bring all this evidence together, and we say that we believe the solution is digital tools that enable farmers to monitor and manage their own impacts and flexibly decide on how to mitigate them. That will obviously create the information to, say, to pass through to retailers and processors and ultimately to consumers about what the environmental impacts of these products actually are, which would enable better sourcing by your by retailers, and it will also enable consumers to make better choices. So if we can actually create transparency in the supply chain with respect to environmental issues, that could be really important. And so maybe just to bring that back again, we looked at these diet change scenarios. So we found that plant-based diets reduce foods emissions by up to 73%, as you said at the beginning of the interview. But they also reduce land use by 3.1 billion hectares, so 76%. But we also find that if you communicate producer information to consumers, there's another scenario that gets opened up, where reducing consumption of animal products by 50% by avoiding the highest impact producers achieves 75% of the greenhouse gas emission reduction.
Wow.
So that's interesting, because it's saying there are actually, it's typically a small number of producers that are doing the environmental harm. Mm-hmm. We find that 25% of producers create 50% of the harm. If we know the impacts of producers, we can target our decisions to avoid those producers and basically have this multiplier effect on any behavioral changes we make. So there you go.
but I mean, cutting that environmental impact of farming, I mean, that's not going to be something that's, you know, very easily achievable, is it?
No, that's exactly right. And that's, you know, there are 570 million farms around the world, all of whom are using slightly different practices. Mm-hmm. There are millions of different crop varieties, about 2 million different crop varieties. So you've got this really, really diverse, complicated sector. And it is a mitigation and environmental challenge, probably like no other in that sense.
But I guess, I mean, you know, the wonderful thing about this study is it's like, you know, it's one of the first, right? And it's at least some concrete evidence of, you know, the kind of impacts that all these different types of farming styles are having on the environment.
Yeah, that's right. So we looked at a lot of different farming styles. I mean, there have been a lot of studies in the past looking at this, but what we've tried to do is bring a lot of that together into one place and understand what it means for mitigation and actual solutions.
And okay, so one of the things that, you know, the headlines everywhere was that, you know, the best thing to do is to go vegan. Why did you come to that conclusion? You know, could you elaborate on that for me?
Yeah, definitely. So I think we know that agriculture is the largest user of land. It covers about 43% of the world's ice and desert free surface. We know that it's the largest user of fresh water. It uses about 2/3 of fresh water, but it drives about 95% of global water scarcity. Mm-hmm. And that's what really matters when you look at water use. We know that it's the largest driver of water pollution. It contributes about 80% of water pollution. Mm-hmm. It's probably the largest sector for greenhouse gas emissions. It's about 25% to 1/3 of greenhouse gas emissions, depending on how you divide up your system.
Okay.
It's also the largest cause of air pollution. One of the largest causes of air pollution, about 1/3 of all air, 1/3 of acidification. So that's basically saying it's probably the single biggest sector for environmental degradation. And diet change is probably, our evidence shows, the biggest way to reduce those impacts. So you put those two things together, and it's probably the single biggest way to reduce our impact. But we can actually go further than that. So what we don't look in our scenario is that by 2050, mm-hmm. meat and dairy consumption is going to increase by 40%. So we're going to require a trillion liters of milk, 500 billion kilograms of dairy, of meat, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And these are just massive amounts. So you add the diet change now, which is basically the Western world reducing their meat consumption. Then you've got all this additional demand coming on from countries in Asia and countries in Africa. There's another component of diet change. So it's not just about the West cutting their meat consumption today. It's about how do we avoid this massive increase in demand for animal products that's coming. So it's both of them. And I think a lot of people have said, isn't population growth a bigger lever?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good point. And I think in the long term, yeah, population growth definitely does matter. But are there any scenarios that we could really change the growth rate of population to have an effect in 10 or 50 years? Probably not. Diet change we can do today, and we need to do it today. You know, it's so important that we do this today, because the worst effects of global warming, the worst consequences of biodiversity loss are going to happen in the next 50 years, not in the next, you know, in 100 years, it's going to be too late.
And I know something, you yourself have actually given up meat.
So I did that about 1 year into the study, mainly after looking at some of the practices that happen on dairy farms and meat farms. So it's a combination of both the environmental impact, I think, and also the ethical side, which is quite hard to ignore when you're studying this information, you know, all day long.
So I guess, you know, what are you hoping will come out from this study? I mean, are you hoping for some policy change maybe? I mean, I understand, you know, promoting a vegan lifestyle, for example, that's something that we can all do on a personal level. But, you know, globally, on a policy level, what do you hope for?
I think what we really hope for is to encourage environmental labeling on food products and possibly to link that with taxes. You know, as I said, if you can do that, you will enable consumer choice. You'll also enable that other scenario where we avoid the highest impact producers mm-hmm. by reducing our consumption by 50% or whatever it is. So you enable those scenarios on the consumer side, but you also create a positive cycle. So producers would have to monitor their impact and mitigate them, and retailers and suppliers would know their impacts and be able to source them better. So this just saying, look, you've got to know, you've got to put a label or whatever it is on the food that says, you know, what has this product done to the environment when it was produced? If we can do that, I think that could be the small change that has a massive impact and shifts the whole system into sustainability. Okay. So yeah, labeling on products, I think, could be the big change.
And I mean, that is something that could, you know, cut across the, as we mentioned before, you know, the millions of diverse producers that are, you know, unique to agriculture.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. With a system so complex, we need, you know, greater transparency is really important. And our evidence shows that this is probably the best solution from an environmental science perspective. you know, it's also increasingly the case in countries like the EU and in regions like the EU that you need this transparency anyway. Mm-hmm. They require that one step forward, one step back traceability for all meat products anyway. So you've got to know who sold you the animal feed, and you've got to know where you sent your animal to slaughter, and that's already has to be known. So it's not a big jump to add environmental information to that.
Would you say there were any limitations to your study, if at all?
So there are limitations, and one is that we think problems like air pollution and water pollution are much more local than we give credit to in our data. So in some cases, if, for example, the Gulf of Mexico has a dead zone that is 8 million square miles. Mm-hmm. So adding a bit more nitrogen, a bit more pollution, the effect there isn't as significant as adding it to a pristine stream in a certain part of the world. Land use, for example,
yeah.
if you deforest an area in Indonesia, it's going to have a much greater consequence for biodiversity than if you deforested some land in, say, Siberia,
for sure,
where biodiversity is a lot lower. So we didn't account for that. But I think all that would really do is increase the variability in the food system. And then a question is, does it increase it so much that animal products would look good? I don't think so. We had a look at biodiversity with some preliminary data that's becoming available recently, and it doesn't change our conclusions. So,
okay. How are you taking this research forward? I mean, I've read all the different scientists, you know, praising this and, you know, saying it's such a comprehensive study and, you know, there's so much that can be done. How are you taking it forward?
So I think one thing that we really want to do is try and keep building this database and building this information and making it really accessible. So the database is already free. It's available online. You can get it from the link in the paper. I think a next step would be, how can we use this data to enable farmers to benchmark their practices, enable us as researchers to better understand the food system further, but also possibly take the first steps to product labeling and enable retailers to put labels on their products in the shop. So that's what we're trying to take the database to the next level and link it to things like farm management software. So in America, mm-hmm, and in Europe and many countries, Brazil, farmers are automatically collecting data on their farms. It's part, you know, it's built into your combine harvester, what your estimates your yield on the spot. It's built into your tractors and your farm equipment, how much fertilizer you're putting. You can track that. So if we could link this kind of environmental quantification to this data that's already becoming available, mm-hmm, that would be a really good step, and we're looking at that as well.
Any last message you'd like to leave us with then, Joseph?
I think there is a huge opportunity in the food system, and it's one that is so important for the future of the planet. I think it's something, you know, this is an opportunity we've really got to seize and we've really got to take. And I think the consequences of not doing so are quite dire, and hopefully that we'll look, you know, future generations will look back on us and say, yeah, they made the changes that were necessary, rather than, wow, what did these guys do? So I really hope that we will make these changes, we'll take these opportunities, and we'll make the planet a much better place and a much healthier global environment.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking to Joseph Poor. He's the lead researcher of a study titled Reducing Food's Environmental Impacts Through Producers and Consumers. And he is from the Department of Zoology and the School of Geography and Environment at the University of Oxford. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, which is available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.